Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Mickleford Podcast of the Irish Examiner. Now, Killorglin in County Kerry is a town that's best known for Puck Fair, the annual festival in which a goat is the centre of proceedings. As with other places in Kerry, it also has its heritage in producing Gaelic footballers, and the local club Lawn Rangers won an All-Ireland club title back in the 1990s. Another hugely positive feature of the town is that it is the home of Effexco, a financial services company that be familiar to any of you who have any dealings in the financial world, because it now has operations across the globe and was set up by local man Brian McCarthy. Why, I'm sure you may be asking, am I talking about Killorglin? Well, that's because there is also a very unusual feature to the town, in that it produced another international figure, one Morris O'Shea Salazar, who, it turns out, is a leading figure in the biggest drug cartel currently alleged to be operating on the planet. The Sinaloa cartel is based in Mexico, but has tentacles right across the globe. Authorities in Chile are looking for Mr. O'Shea Salazar on major drug charges on the basis that he is the European head of the Sinaloa cartel. And it turns out that not only has Morris O'Shea Salazar very strong Kerry connections, but he spent a decade of his formative years growing into adulthood in Killorglin before spreading his wings and heading out into the world. Irish Examiner reporter Liz Dunphy visited the town recently to find out how he is remembered among townspeople, and she joins me now. Liz, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Mick.
Liz, start at the start, as they say, because I suppose he won't be familiar to a lot of people. But give us Morris O'Shea Salazar's background. Where was he born, and who were or are his parents?
Yeah, so this is really a fascinating story. So Morris O'Shea Salazar was born in Mexico, I believe, in 1990. His father was a Kerry man, Morris O'Shea as well, and his mother is a Mexican woman, Yolanda Salazar Tariba. Now, Yolanda Salazar is actually related to, you'll have heard of obviously El Chapo, Joaquin Guzman. He's possibly the most notorious and well-known drug trafficking crime boss in the world from the Sinaloa region of Mexico. The operation is huge, as you mentioned in the intro, with tentacles reaching right across the world, obviously now, including in Ireland. But also the US authorities have previously said that the Sinaloa cartel, which is what El Chapo previously headed up, is the biggest narco-terror group in the world. So it's really, really, you know, serious stuff. So it's understood that his first wife, she was a Salazar, and that she was related to this guy, Morris O'Shea Salazar's mother, Yolanda. So yeah, as you kind of mentioned as well, Morris O'Shea is now wanted by international law enforcement. So Chile has alleged that he is actually the leader of the European wing of the Sinaloa cartel, which I mentioned before was once headed by who I understand would be an uncle, El Chapo, and is now, it's believed that it's now run by his sons, because El Chapo was extradited in 2017 to the US and he's been jailed for life there since.
Yeah, we'll come to him in a minute. But Morris O'Shea Salazar himself, Liz, as you say, his father was his father from the Killorglin area?
Yeah, that's what we understand, that his father was from the Killorglin area. So basically, it's been reported that his father died in what's understood to have been a car crash at some point. And then Yolanda moved the family. So Morris, and there was also, he has a sister about 2 years younger than him, moved the family to Killorglin, where, you know, they would have had relations, I suppose, on the father's side. So they moved, they lived in a housing estate, on Banshock housing estate. You might know it. It's just outside of Killorglin town. And they were there for about 10 years. They moved in 2005, I think. And yeah, so as you said, I went down to the area and was talking to some locals there. And it was kind of astounding, really, to hear some of their stories. Many of them said that he would have been very feared locally, that he was known for drug dealing even when he moved over. I think he would have only been about 15 when he moved over. So he was already allegedly involved in drug dealing as a teenager in Ireland at that stage. He was known as the Mexican. Some local people said they didn't even know his real name. He was just known as Mexican. I spoke to one person who interestingly said that when they moved out of the house, when the O'Shea Salazars moved out of the house, that one large bag was found full of SIM cards, like from telephones, obviously. Another large bag was found full stuffed with burner phones or what appeared to be burner phones. And then there were a number of homemade knives or shanks also found in the house, actually up in the attic. One of them was made from a screwdriver with a big kind of razor blade taped to the top of it. And there were more made from toothbrushes with razor blades taped to the top of them. Now, when Maurice O'Shea Salazar was living in Ireland, he was never, as far as I'm aware, charged with any drug sale or supply offences, but he was before the district court for a number of other offences. One of those was actually a firearm offence, which may have actually been a knife offence. I'm not sure exactly what the arm was, but he was before the courts on some smaller charges. But actually, I spoke to his solicitor, Padraig O'Connell, you know, the well-known Kerry solicitor, and he said that he had dealt with this young man at the time, and he said that he described him as being very affable and larger than life and well-spoken, and he had very positive things to say about him. He said that there was no way you'd suspect him of involvement in organised crime in any way, shape or form. But he also said, you know, these are just allegations of the organised crime involvement at the moment that, you know, that hasn't been proven in a court as of yet.
Yeah, I know Padraig O'Connell is very well-known criminal law solicitor, very, very well-respected and reputed to be very good at his job. Involved a lot of high-profile cases in Kerry. Just going back to Killoglan, first of all, Liz, he went to school there for a while.
Yeah, he did. He went to school there, and I spoke to some people who went to school with him, and they said they were shocked about the allegations that he was running the European wing of the Sinaloa cartel. They said that he wasn't particularly academic. He didn't come across as particularly, you know, bright, I suppose, really, that he seemed like quite a normal, regular guy who kind of went under the radar to some extent is how one person described him. But he was also, this person did also say that he was kind of known as a cheeky kind of guy, and he'd always be in trouble, but very low level trouble, nothing major. But I have also heard from a number of people who knew him and knew of him back in the day, who said that he was often involved in fights as well. Some people said they suspected that was in relation to owing money for drugs, I suppose, you know, drug debt. There are obviously so many violent incidents in relation to drug debt in Ireland at the moment, and they suspected some of the fighting was in relation to that. Also, somebody said that he was known not just in Killoglan for drug dealing, but also in Killarney. I think he had significant links in the Killarney area as well. And yeah, apparently he was known for, like, allegedly being involved in drugs in both Killoglan and Killarney.
I suppose, as Padraig O'Connell said, there are allegations, but notwithstanding that, I'm just trying to get my head around this idea of this man now. He's well in adulthood. He says born 1990, so we're talking about he's about 33, 34 now. But when he was younger, I'm just trying to get my head around the idea that this associate of El Chapo, and we all are aware of how violent and how crazy a lot of these drug cartels can be in South America, and the massive quantities of drugs in which they deal, principally cocaine and others as well. And I'm trying to marry that with the image of the individual who went on, allegedly again, to head up the European arm of the cartel. And we know that that has to be a central position in any global drug cartel, because as we've seen principally in this country, we might talk about it later, the amount of drugs that are brought across the Atlantic for distribution throughout Europe, which would be one of the principal markets. And I'm trying to marry the image of the mastermind of that with a fella street dealing in a town like Killoglan or even Killarney. But I suppose maybe he just had the taste for getting involved in the thing from a very early age, because we're talking about a fella there who would have been in Killargan between the ages of about 14 or 15 and his mid-20s. So it would seem that from such humble beginnings in terms of crime, he graduated pretty quickly. And the other thing I'm just wondering, Liz, this stuff about what was found in the house, do you have any sense that that might be urban legend, or that the SIM cards and the shank? You just wonder, shanks generally tend to be an implement that are used in prisons. And because, you know, you have to, it's a homemade weapon, effectively. You can't smuggle in or have possession of a knife in prison. But you'd wonder, did any urban legends spread about him once they realised that he went on to higher or lower things after leaving Mid-Kerry?
Yeah, I mean, as regards the finding items in the house, I'm pretty sure that that's accurate. I spoke to people who found them, and they were so fearful after finding them that they actually burnt them, because they didn't even hand them into Gardaí. They were just concerned because they were quite fearful of the family. So, and the people who told me that have no reason to lie to me about it. So, I think that's a fairly accurate and unsurprising as well, I suppose, as well, really, if it's somebody who was allegedly involved in drug dealing. But then back to your point about how does somebody go from a housing estate in Killargan in Onbanshock to allegedly running, as you said, you know, the European wing of the Sinaloa cartel. I suppose that largely comes down to family connections, you'd have to assume. Like, you know, if he's related to the Sinaloa cartel crime bosses. Apparently he takes orders directly from El Chapo's sons, Los Chapitos, who are believed to be kind of running the organization in their father's absence, as he's jailed in America. So, you know, I suppose family connections is how it happens, really, isn't it? And yeah, and you can learn on the job, I guess, in anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that Guzman himself is known as El Chapo, and his young fellas are Los Chapatillos.
Yeah.
it's like the mini Chapos kind of thing.
Exactly.
But his mother now, who quite obviously brought him to Killargan, and it'd be fascinating, you know, sometimes you can imagine a scenario whereby, oh, you know, you've often heard of it and know a bit about it. The parent, especially when their young fella might be hitting teenage years, is living in a particular place and wants to get them out of trouble, you know, and maybe he was mixing with the wrong people when they were in Mexico, and suddenly let's get him over to South Mid-Kerry where he'll be grand. But it turns out, like, you can't take the man away from the thing. But his mother was no innocent either.
Yes.
And did you hear much about his mother, her time in Killargan?
I spoke to a few people who knew her a little bit, and you know, people who she had appealed to for help and stuff when she first moved there, setting up life there. And like, nobody had anything terribly negative to say about her. They said she was quite quiet, that she was working. But some people who lived on the estate at the time with her said they found her quite cold and unfriendly, and not sociable. And also they had some dogs which were described as a cross between a pit bull and a Rottweiler, and that they were quite aggressive, and that they attacked some other dogs on the estate before, and there was blood. And so so mixed reports about her. But yeah, I haven't spoken to anyone who knew her very well. You know, she seemed to have really kept herself to herself, a lot of neighbours said. But I don't think she was all that innocent either, as you mentioned, because she's actually jailed now in Chile at the moment. She was jailed just in December gone for her involvement in a drug trafficking organisation. So Chile is alleging that her son was organising, as we spoke about a number of times, the European wing of the Sinaloa cartel, but that he had actually sent her over to Chile with his uncle, her brother Ricardo Salazar Chiriba, and they were to run this operation whereby cocaine, which would have been produced in Bolivia is just over the northern border in Chile, so that cocaine would be bought in Bolivia, brought down down through Chile and then shipped out from Chile to multiple European ports. I believe some of it was even destined for Dublin. And that so they were basically caught and jailed last year, the mother and the uncle. But the Chilean authorities are trying to extradite the son, Morris O'Shea Salazar, who at the moment, who is believed to be hiding out in Sinaloa in Mexico. But yeah, but we're not sure exactly where he is. So she's been involved herself.
They're pretty lengthy jail sentences they got, aren't they?
Yeah, so the mum got 10 years and the uncle got 15 years. But I think there was an additional 8 years on top as well. So yeah, significant. It was a significant operation. There was a lot of cocaine involved. And interestingly as well, actually, as part of that trial and investigation, I suppose, conversations came out on, there was this encrypted phone system called EncroChat, which was used by the criminal fraternity very extensively. And because it was thought to be a very secure way of communicating, criminals would talk very openly on it about their, you know, drug trafficking or plans, or, you know, about their criminal enterprises, essentially. And this system was hacked by law enforcement and has led to.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Thousands of arrests and I'm not sure how many convictions yet in the UK, but more than 1,000. And intelligence from it has been used in Ireland as well, as far as I'm aware. But there were conversations released through this EncroChat system in this Chilean prosecution of the Salazars. And Morris, there were conversations in which Morris O'Shea was talking quite openly about drug trafficking. And it looks like he had a number of Irish truck drivers and people working as part of the organisation, getting drugs into Ireland as well, as part of that. So, yeah, so it's a fascinating situation, really. And yeah,
it is. And Yolanda, his mother, God, you can imagine, like, obviously, at the earlier stage, she decides to bring her two children. She's widowed and she decides to bring her two children to Ireland for whatever reason. Then a decade later, heads back and either through her son or through her family connections or whatever, gets involved and is now spending 10 years in a Chilean prison. And I say prison in South America are nothing to write home about, you know.
You wouldn't be rushing in the doors there for sure. But I suppose the fact that because of the Irish father, the fact that the children would have had Irish passports and therefore European passports, it probably made them quite valuable to the cartel as well, I suppose, because they have legitimate reasons to be in Europe. And obviously, Europe is a huge market for drugs, you know, one of the biggest in the world. We'll pay much more, obviously, in Europe for drugs than they will in South America. So it's it was probably very useful that Morris did have this Irish passport and this reason to be here legitimately and could come and go as he wished between Mexico and Europe.
Very good point. And is there any suspicion that while they were based in Killorglin, quite possibly visiting the local Super Value and going down to watch the GA football team playing and what have you, that at the same time were they plugged into El Chapo and the whole cartel business? Jesus.
It's hard to know. Like, some people have kind of speculated, oh, were they planted here in order to make contacts? Other people, you know, say, oh, it's just too shocking to even think of that. It's hard to know. Like, apparently he did, Morris O'Shea Salazar, apparently he did kind of threaten people in school with his links to the mob or to the cartel or whatever, you know. So he did talk about it, I think, reasonably openly. But yeah, I don't know how connected he was to them at that stage as a young teenager.
Yeah, it's one thing you get into a bit of bother in school and somebody says they have an older brother who'll come after you. It's something else altogether. They tell you there'll be a crack hit squad arriving from South America. It's a bit different, all right. I suppose just to give people a bit of background, some people, as you say, Liz, will know, but just briefly about El Chapo. Guzman is his correct name. He was first captured in 1993 in Guatemala. and was extradited and sentenced to 20 years in prison in Mexico for murder and drug trafficking. And as we know, all of this drug trafficking is associated with just a huge level of murder and degradation. There isn't anybody that they come up against. But apparently he bribed a load of prison guards and escaped from what was a maximum security prison in 2001. And again, we know from the likes of Pablo Escobar and people like that, that the whole idea of being in a maximum security in some of these Central and South American countries doesn't amount to much that you can get out if you've enough money in that. But anyway, he got out and there was $8.8 million was put on his head as a reward by Mexico and the US. He eventually was arrested in Mexico, escaped again the following year through a tunnel dug by associates. Again, he was recaptured, this time following a shootout in 2016. And this time he was extradited to the US. And then 3 years later, I remember this trial actually, he was found guilty in the US on a number of charges and sentenced to life imprisonment and incarcerated in what the Americans called their Supermax prison. This is the super of the Supermax prisons they have. It's in Florence in Colorado. And that's a place that has housed people like some of the most notorious criminals that have ever come across our screens, including John Gotti, the mafia leader, and various other people. And the conditions in those Supermax prisons are such that, first of all, there's absolutely no chance of escape. But beyond that, you could suggest, and it has been in places, that it amounts to psychological terror. There's no prison work or anything. You're in a cell on your own. You're kept there. You might get an hour inside in the yard on your own every day, and the rest of the time you're in there. And it looks like there's absolutely no chance of that man ever emerging from there. And while he's in there, his sons, the Los Chapatitos, will be running the organisation. But when you think of Maurice O'Shea Salazar, Liz, he could be facing into a similar type of incarceration in the United States if the Chileans get him first, and then if the Americans decide that he's questions to answer in their country as well.
Yeah, he could be in an awful lot of trouble. And I mean, it seems from what was released in the Chilean trial that they have a lot of evidence against him. So I would think that he will want to stay in hiding for as long as he can, for sure. Yeah, like Sinaloa, that area of Mexico, like Mexico has really taken over from obviously Colombia. You mentioned Pablo Escobar earlier, and Colombia was always known as a kind of narco state, narco terror state in the past. But Mexico has really kind of overtaken it as a major narco state, really. And drugs have done such huge damage in that country, and it's become such a huge industry, I suppose, for that country. It's just had a massive impact. So because of that, it makes people like O'Shea Salazar, I guess, feel that they're reasonably untouchable, and they have places to hide and people to protect them. And obviously, as you know, like, money is a very protective measure, so he can pay to, you know, keep himself hidden and keep his safety for a while, I guess. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how the extradition treaty goes. Obviously, Mexico did extradite his uncle in the past. So we'll have to see what happens. As you say, he could be facing serious jail time if found guilty of the allegations against him.
And it'll be interesting to see also if he decides to have recourse for whatever reason to his Irish passport and look for assistance with the consular assistance from the Irish embassy or whatever there. I don't think he's expected back in Killarglin, Liz, is he?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I don't think he's been spotted recently, but I don't know if he's been back there for a while, to be honest. He had moved to Spain sometime after leaving Killarglin, and he was based in Barcelona for a while, as far as I'm aware. So I don't think he's expected back anytime soon. But everybody should keep their eyes peeled down there anyway, and let us know if there are any sightings.
Yeah, definitely.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
No, it is kind of a novelty, an individual like that being at the centre of everything, being down in I don't think Killarglin, you describe it as a rural town. It's quite a bustling town, actually. It's a place that does very well. But anyway, notwithstanding that, Liz, there's another reality too, though, and that has come to the fore, particularly in recent years. And that is the whole idea, and there may well be a connection here in some way, the way that the Irish coastline is being used to import drugs that for a huge period of the time they're ultimately destined elsewhere, but getting it across the Atlantic. And apparently, because we don't have a very robust navy, it nearly looks as if we're seen as a bit of a soft touch in that respect.
Yeah, so I was actually speaking to the former naval commander, Eugene Ryan, who was saying that it's really a huge problem that the naval service has been depleted to such an extent that we just don't have the cover. Like you might remember, there was a big suspected drug trafficking operation which was intercepted by Gardaí there the other week down in West Cork at Tregumna Pier. There were arrests at Tregumna and in Lepp village following it. Basically, yeah, the one naval ship that we have in operation at the moment was up in Dublin for the St. Patrick's Day operation, the St. Patrick's Day celebrations, you know, because it happened just a few days beforehand. So there was no naval ship in Cork at the time, which would have been able to respond to, you know, a call for help, I suppose, if one was made. Eugene Ryan was saying that this is a real problem and that international drug cartels are essentially using our lack of naval cover as a reason to, you know, traffic drugs through Ireland, essentially. He said that we've become a light touch. And that, interestingly as well, he said before that, you know, there's so much money in the drugs trade, I suppose, that traffickers will use any means possible to get drugs into the markets where they're destined for and where they'll make the most money, I suppose, on the street, you know. So he was saying that drug consignments are often dropped into the sea, essentially. So often they'll use, I thought this was quite interesting, often they'll use kind of like torpedo-like canisters, which can be as big as bathtubs. And these containers can be stuffed full of largely cocaine, but other drugs as well, I guess. And they, because, you know, the hulls of ships are magnetic, so they use a magnetic force to attach these canisters full of drugs, essentially, these torpedo-like canisters full of drugs to the hull of ships. And then when it gets to a certain, you know, latitude, longitude point or a certain point, they will release this consignment of drugs. And then these can be on timers. So somebody, you know, a collection party or whatever, I suppose, can come and collect the drugs at a certain time when they've been told that they'll be released on a timer. A flotation device will help them rise to the surface. And, you know, they can then be collected and distributed from there, I suppose. And he was also saying that, you know, we know that drugs are often smuggled in things like coffee containers, because the smell of the coffee will distract dogs if they're going to be searching for drugs. But also that they're actually stuffing them into the pallets themselves instead of just into the containers. So sometimes the pallets that will be used by legitimate merchants and shipping companies and everything will be stuffed with drugs by the drug traffickers, and that they're always coming up with new ways of smuggling them into countries. The lack of naval services is, he believes, definitely a really big problem and is leaving us wide open to drug traffickers getting drugs through Ireland. So Ireland would then be used as an access point, a kind of jump off point. Obviously, like, we're actually the fourth highest cocaine users in the world, according to a UN report on drug use. So Ireland has very high cocaine use amongst its own population. But obviously, we're a small population. So Ireland can then be used as a transit point, essentially, to get drugs into, you know, the nearby the UK. They can, you know, traffickers can hop onto a ferry over to the UK, drive drugs over and then on into Europe as well, or fly them as well, obviously, of course. But the lack of Navy services does seem to be a concern at the moment. And actually, Eugene Ryan was saying as well, interestingly, that he was saying if he was, you know, a narco, which he obviously isn't, that he would, that you choose times like St. Paddy's Day when, or St. Patrick's Day, when, you know, you might know that, you know, a lot of Navy personnel or Gardaí might be on holidays, or the boat will be somewhere else, you know, busy with something else. So the timing of the Tregumna situation was interesting. But yeah.
No, definitely it is. And as well, as you say, there's been a number of incidents, particularly off the Kerry and Cork coast and even inland, and even there last year. And I think there may be people before the courts for this. Well, 157 million worth of cocaine was seized off the West Cork. I was, yeah, that went up around Wexford as well. There was various machinations going on there. But the point that strikes me about it, Liz, is if you're talking about huge amounts like that being seized, and these cartels operate on the basis that some of their product is going to be seized, and despite that, they're going to make a lot of money. But if you're talking about that level of seizures, Jesus, how much is actually getting through? It's frightening on one level.
We're not touching this. I mean, even Garda Commissioner Drew Harris, I think, said a few weeks ago that we just don't know how much is getting through. And a source I spoke to today actually said that they understand that only about 10% of what's coming through is found. So, like, obviously, we get intelligence on drug trafficking operations from the organisation MAWAC, the anti-drug smuggling organisation based in Lisbon, MAWAC-N, and they'll have intelligence. They share intelligence between I think it's 7 countries involved in that. So if they suspect a drug shipment is coming, they'll let another jurisdiction know that, you know, it might be heading their way. And I think collaborating like that at an international level is really key to kind of stopping drugs from getting into our countries as well, really, isn't it?
No, that's definitely the case. Liz, anyway, listen, you'd stay in touch with us, particularly if you get any information or any leads as to the whereabouts of Maurice O'Shea Salazar. We'll follow his progress through what appears allegedly to be crime world, and quite possibly maybe facing criminal justice systems in one or more countries. But you let us know if you hear more about him anyway, Liz.
I will do, absolutely, yeah. And nice talking to you, Mick, as always.
Liz, that's great. Thank you very much for talking to us today. Liz Dunphy, Irish Examiner reporter on the life and I include the word here, alleged crimes of Maurice O'Shea Salazar, one-time resident with roots in Killorglin, County Kerry. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Mick.
I'd also like to thank our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you, folks, for listening. We'll be back with you again soon. Take it easy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.